Community Voices with Ron Holland. In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting. Community Voices with Ron Holland. Giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart. Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7. Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland, giving you an opportunity to share your thoughts, your perspective, and your views on a broad range of issues impacting your neighborhood, community, your city, our nation, and indeed our world. We have another great show for you this morning. I have a really great friend, good friend of mine, Henry Hollingshead, is here in the studio this morning, and we are going to talk about politics. We're going to talk about world affairs. We're going to talk about just about everything, because he is well equipped from the conservative perspective to talk about these issues. Henry, thanks so much for coming in.
Ron, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the chance to come down here and show you the incompetence of the Obama administration.
Here you go. We can't have a simple discussion without you disparaging the Obama administration.
Well, it's not disparaging. I mean, if you want to discuss politics, you have to discuss incompetence.
Oh, come on.
I mean, it goes hand in hand.
Henry, first of all, let's be clear about something. Barack Obama's leadership pales in comparison to any other leader that we've seen on the presidential level. Is
pale,
that correct?
Pale is the right word. Anemic, I think, would be a little bit closer. Anytime that you take John Kerry.
You know that was a joke, right?
Yes.
You know I was setting you up for that, right?
I understand that.
I just wanted to see where you were going to go with this one.
I didn't want to touch that one, really. I wanted to move on. But John Kerry showed his complete and total lack of knowledge at the Democratic convention when he got up and he said, "Oh, Russia's our buddy. We can sit down and talk with these people." I mean, why would you think Russia would lie to us? Are you kidding me? I mean, anyone who looks at that and then realizes that he really is probably as unsophisticated as Chamberlain was when he got up and he said, "Peace in our time."
Well, see, here's where I disagree. Right now, if we were to compare President Bush and President Obama just with respect to the numbers of jobs that were created in the last 5 years, we're talking about close to 8 million jobs. So President Bush couldn't hold a candle next to President Obama with regard to the kinds of growth that we're seeing in the private sector, as well as even in government at this point in his presidential in his position. So I just don't think anyone at this point can suggest that President Bush holds a candle to President Obama. Absolutely not.
Well,
and we've talked about this issue. Now, see, you know, I start getting on my rhetorical rants and we continue going.
You don't give me a chance to answer.
I never give you a chance.
No, because you know I have the answer, and I will show the fallacy in your argument.
Oh, absolutely not. 700,000 jobs per month for 6 months when President Obama took office.
More and people are now unemployed percentage-wise than have ever been. Less people are working now. The jobs created are less than $10 an hour, and 80% of them have been part-time.
You make
more money on welfare and working the unemployment lines at $40,000 a year than getting a job at Mickey D's and paying the rent.
Do you prefer that these folks stay on unemployment? See, there is a pride attached to being able to punch a clock and being able to go to work. And I prefer that if there are going to be jobs available, that if there are going to be part-time jobs, let those jobs be available to individuals so that they can work, so that they are not a drain on our society. That is the perspective of anybody who is progressive.
I believe that the biggest problem we have in this country right now on jobs is many companies cannot go out and hire too many people because of the 49, the Obamacare thing coming down in a few days. No one knows where it's coming. No one knows what's happening. But the other thing that is just horrible is we have got to raise minimum wage.
From a conservative?
Let me finish. We have got to raise minimum wage, and we have got to cut unemployment and welfare benefits. We have got to cut food stamps.
So should this happen simultaneously?
Yes, absolutely. The other thing that should happen is that we should stop taking FICA money out of everybody's check. It's ridiculous. Let everybody keep their money. Don't even send them a tax bill until they've made $50,000. Let everybody keep everything. It's more trouble to collect less than $50,000 for the government than it is to go get it.
Well, you and I have always agreed on that point. I do think that we should be able to keep as much money in our pockets as possible. But there's also another component to this, particularly as it relates to tax and our tax burden. We have roads and bridges and construction in this country that is absolutely necessary. Some of the roads here in Charlotte are absolutely atrocious. So without the tax base, without the tax dollars, we can't fund these kinds of efforts, primarily because it will cost the private sector too much money to do it. So we have to have a tax base in this country.
You have to have a tax base in this country, yes, but we're looking at local tax base, we're looking at state tax base.
But that's too great a burden on the local and state level. That's why we have a federal.
Not if the government would take the restrictions off the states and stop making the states pay for silly, stupid things.
Like what?
In education. We have to spend so much money in not teaching the children. We have to give them guidance counselors. We have to have touchy-feely sessions. We have to have all this. No. What we have to do, and on education, it's real simple. You want to clean up education? Turn the discipline over to the unions. Turn the discipline over to the OSHA. Make them straighten these kids up. I'm serious. Listen, you want to talk about a safe work environment. The teachers are not working in one. The union is taking money for them. Why doesn't the union step in and make sure the teachers work in a safe working environment? They're collecting the money.
Well, let's get back to taxes, because I do think it's important that we understand that when we have a tax base, when everyone is collectively responsible for their fair share of taxes, what is important is that when we inspect our meat, when we fly on the plane, when we are repairing the roads and the bridges and our sewer systems and the water systems, all of those things that require our use and that we benefit, it's going to take a hefty tax base in order for us to accomplish that
goal.
Okay.
All right. My question: where should the tax base start, and what is right to steal from someone? Because the way you look at it, no. You're not making a dime of this money. You're deciding that you want your road fixed. You're deciding you want your bridge fixed. I'm not saying it's wrong, okay? I'm just saying, when you look at it in that way, my question is, and you've never given me an answer, you've never answered this one question: what is a fair amount to take from everyone for doing nothing?
What do you mean doing nothing? If the roads...
But all you're doing is you're going to collect the money and then you're going to do something. All right. The IRS collects the money, and then all they're doing is collecting money. They don't know how the party's going to go.
But the federal government allocates a certain portion of those tax dollars to each of the states. It's then up to the states to allocate that money for the appropriate repairs.
Again.
And so whatever the fair amount is, I've never answered that question, primarily because I don't know the answer to that question. What would be fair? Would it be fair for a person making $10,000 a year to have a tax burden of 39%, and a person who is making $500,000 a year, his tax burden is only 15%. That to me seems inequitable. Inequitable. Absolutely. That
where's a thesaurus when you need one?
but the point is we ought to have a situation where the tax system is set up fairly for everyone. And you and I have always agreed on this particular point, and that is, when you have the rich are able to utilize the system itself in terms of being able to avoid certain taxes and have certain tax havens across seas and not pay certain types of taxes, that seems to me unfair, particularly when a person making $10,000 a year is barely able to put food on their table.
All right. I agree with you on a lot of what you say. First off, I do agree that we should have an equitable tax system in this country. I've said it many times before. If you make less than $50,000 a year, keep it.
I'm sort of in the same boat with you on that one.
I mean, really, taxes should start at $50,000. If you make $50,000 a year, you can start throwing in some money, pal. And I think all the way up. All the way up, $50,000
and up. Should be the cutoff.
It should be the cutoff, and it should be 10% of gross.
Do you think the American people would embrace that? I happen to believe that they would, because
no.
I'm making under $50,000. So if I have to make taxes,
it amazes me that conservative people don't go with two ideas that just really amaze me. The one is that we give a check to someone like Donald Trump or somebody like the Wizard of Omaha, these fabulously billionaire guys. Mm-hmm. We send them a check for $2,200 a month, Social Security, because they have to take it. I was not talking, but one gentleman that is a billionaire. He is a flat billionaire. Told me straight out it was more trouble to get the check than it was worth, because he had to send it to accounting and he had to do all this stuff with it. He says, keep it. Why was sending out this money? I'll never understand. The other thing I don't understand is, if we're going to do a flat tax at a cutoff and go up from there and don't go down and... Stop.
So what would be an appropriate rate after $50,000?
10%.
10%?
10%.
But would that be enough to fund the kinds of repairs and the kinds of efforts that we need to make sure that our infrastructure is in place?
If you streamline the government, mm-hmm. knocked out Obamacare, watch the dollars and cents, and not send all the money overseas, yes, you could do it with 10% if it was straight. Because let's face it. So some of these billionaires literally pay no taxes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, if you make $2 billion and you pay no taxes, the other thing that I could see, now this is going to sound weird, but I think that they should have a one-time billionaire flat tax. Total up all of these guys, the first $1 billion doesn't count. You get $1 billion free. After that, 20%.
But that accounts for less than a third. Not even. What would be the number of billionaires in our country?
You would probably affect
less than
1,000 people. And you would probably pay off almost a third of the national debt. Hmm. That's how much money they have.
Would billionaires agree to such a...
Hey, listen, they get up and they say, oh, you don't charge us enough now. Put their feet to the fire. Tell them they're going to give up 20% and they can't hide it in the Caymans, and let's see what happens. No, they'd squawk like there's no tomorrow. Just like IRS does not want people to get a $50,000 break, because they think of how many people they would have to fire if they had no one looking at anyone under $50,000 gross income. That's, how many people do you think they'd have to fire?
That's a huge department.
Yeah, you betcha. Yeah, that's a party bill that'll croak a chicken, boy. I'll tell ya.
Yeah. Interestingly, you mentioned the Affordable Health Care Act. Of course, folks are derisive in how they describe
sure.
it as Obamacare.
Sure.
And, this morning, as I was preparing to come to the studio, my wife shared with me that because she works for a major company,
yeah.
and the company has indicated that they are going to give their employees a stipend to start looking for different coverage. And initially, I was concerned about that, mm-hmm. primarily because we've had health care for the amount of time that we've
can
been
I
here.
Ask how much they're going to give you as a stipend? Now,
the initial stipend is $500.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's an ongoing thing. We're not clear about that. But there was some initial trepidation there, primarily because we've had health care for a long time.
Right.
And so now, and the coverage they provided has been really great coverage.
Now, your company that your wife works for, which you are attached to, it has over 50 people working for it.
160,000 employees.
160,000. Employees.
Right.
So it is you take 160,000 and multiply it by 500, I mean, whatever, they're going to be saving millions of dollars on Obamacare.
Absolutely.
And they're going to pocket it all.
But here's the deal, though. What is available to us now in really gleaning through some of the paperwork that she showed me this morning was the idea that they are already part of an exchange.
Okay.
And we have five plans to choose from.
Okay.
And that there should be some savings in terms of what we're spending now. Mm-hmm. So the benefit of Obamacare is giving us the option to make the choice that we want between five different companies that are in or a part of this exchange. And the problem that I have with your perspective and mm-hmm. those of the Republican Party is when we look at an issue, for instance, as folks who are walking off the street into a hospital,
right.
that bill itself is about $1,500 if they don't have health coverage.
Exactly.
But what the Affordable Health Care Act will do will significantly reduce that $1,500 to probably about $800. Dollars. So there is a huge savings, and the CBO has already scored and suggested that if the Republicans were successful at defunding Obamacare, it would cost us an extra, I think it was about maybe $2-4 billion just to defund the program itself.
Okay, now let me show you a couple of mistakes that you have in this thing. It's real simple. I got my bill on my new insurance through Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
It went up $62 a month. My services went down 20%, and they wiped out my deductible, so I'll have to start over again, a $2,000 deductible. I'll start over again at zero. Secondly, if you think you're going to get crackheads to sign up for Obamacare, you're out of your mind. Listen, this thing isn't going to work. The problem is the fine is going to be $50. Or up to $200, and they're not even going to be able to collect it. It's going to cost a single male, healthy single male, it's going to run $250 to $300 a month. People don't have the money.
Well,
it's just this whole thing is going to wind up as a huge mess because what is happening is you're asking people to pay an ongoing tax and they don't have the money. It's simple.
But what I find cynical in all of this is particularly when we're talking about the mandates. Republicans had been pushing this idea of mandates for many, many, many years, going back to even Ronald Reagan. And so suddenly when President Obama puts together this Affordable Health Care Act along with the legislative body, suddenly there's a huge problem with the mandate. My problem is if anybody seeks health care and we have to pay for it, there has to be some mandate that they take responsibility for their own coverage. Again, this is not an issue where there's not going to be growing pains in this kind of legislation. There are going to be growing pains, just like with Social Security, just like with every other program that people are benefiting from right now, there are going to be some problems, some hiccups in the road. We have to refine, redefine, and we have to tinker with the program until it benefits absolutely everybody, including yourself.
The problem with the program is the way that the program was put into place.
They said that about Social Security.
Yes, I know they did. But what I am saying is the difference in money is incredible. They had a chance to do this. Look, if this was so good, if this was such a good idea, why is it that the unions are against it? Why is it that so many liberal thinking groups are against it? Why are they getting all of these different passages to get out of it? Why are they getting all of this? Listen, if this was so good, why aren't the senators lining up to get in it? Where are the congressmen?
Because we have
the union leaders.
We have recalcitrant obstructionist folks in Congress, both on the House and the Senate side, who are literally scaring folks to death about this particular program.
So
that's what they're doing. And so there's no wonder that there's confusion out there about what's going on with this program.
What you're saying is the union are now working against this plan.
No, I'm not saying that. What I am saying is what I am saying is that there is a lot of confusion out there, and that confusion has been implemented and employed by the Republican Party to confuse folks, primarily because they want to destroy President Obama. What we see from the Republican Party, it's not about the American people. The American people made a decision about the affordable health care. The fact that
they rejected it 24 times since.
No, they didn't. First of all, this decision was made with the re-election of President Obama. This decision was made with the Supreme Court upholding the law. This decision was made by a Senate who took up this issue 49 times and rejected it. So the American people made their decision. So now we got a bunch of Tea Party, I want to call them names so bad. So we got a bunch of folks in the Republican Party who are doing everything they can to undermine what was already a democratic process. And that is an election, that is the Supreme Court, and that is the Senate who made the decision to reject what these folks have been implementing.
Ron, mellow.
I'm sorry, but I'm just saying if we're going to live in a democracy.
So what you're saying, is one of the pillars of the Democratic Party, the unions that have come out and said this is going to destroy the middle class. There is no way that this is going to work on anything. They have been the leader, the absolute leader in fighting to get dispensations for companies. Mm-hmm. All of these companies, all of these people, all of these unions that look at this thing and say this is going to kill. The biggest problem with Obamacare, Ron, is it's going to kill cash flow. Nobody's got the money to pay for it. You start sucking out $200, $300, $400 a month out of people's checks when they're trying to make ends meet on an $8 a week job, our job at McDonald's, and you're now expecting them to pay another bill?
Well, first of all,
it's not going to work.
Well, first of all, it's not $2,000 and $3,000 a month that's going to be coming out of these folks' checks.
No, it's going to be $300,
okay.
$200.
So right now, and I can say this with a great degree of certainty, we're paying probably about $450 a month for our current coverage. And so,
let me ask you two questions real quick. Is that $450 taken out? Is it paid out of the check and then you get the remainder? Or do you have to write a check for it?
No, it comes out of our check automatically.
So it comes out automatically?
Automatically.
Okay.
Our participation in the...
Now, what's going to happen when they stop their participation and you get that bill? Do you have $400 right now, $400 that you can grab in cash flow and pay that bill? Because in 15 days, pal, that's what you're going to be looking at.
The way the system, the way the Affordable Health Care Act is structured at this point, that in individuals that cannot afford it, they will be subsidized. And so that to me, again, is an important component, because we're talking about being able to provide health care coverage for millions of people who would otherwise not have
it. If you have it now, will you be subsidized later for it?
That I don't know.
If you're not subsidized with it later, that means it's going to be giving you a bill. My question again is, no, just realistically, go with me on this.
Okay, go ahead.
Seriously, if when you get at the end of your month, okay, and with what you make, could you sit down seriously and write another check for $450 for health insurance?
If part of the exchange allows us to get into a plan that is similar to what we have right now and those numbers are the same, that absolutely, that's what we can do, because that's what we're footing right now. If we're footing $450 a month now and they're in the exchange amongst those that group of folks in the exchange, if they're competing for our dollars, we certainly will be able to benefit
right
from the program.
But what I'm saying is if you're not getting the $450 now, you have to pay it out of what you have. You're going to take a $450 cut because the insurance company is your company is only going to pay probably a month as a stipend. They're going to give you $500 and you're on your own.
Now
you get the insurance. Now just let me ask you, if it works out my way, if it works out the way I'm saying, doom and gloom, you don't get the 450, and now you've got to pony up the 450. So that's a $900 swing in your pocketbook. Can you afford it?
No, absolutely, I couldn't afford $900, but that's where the subsidy comes in, and that's where the income brackets have been in terms of the tiers that allow for the subsidies to be available to families. Those are the kinds of things that are in part of the program. And so, again, we would not have to foot a $900 bill because the subsidies are available to individuals who are in certain income brackets. That has been part of the program all along.
Tell you what, you bring me back October 2nd or after, and we'll have this conversation.
We certainly
because
will.
Because you're going to get that bill, pal.
You're going to see that I'm right on this, baby.
Well, this is going to be a real wake-up call to this country when these insurance companies,
not only the insurance companies, but the
companies are going to start playing with these games.
Well, see, I'm not moved by the scare tactics. Again, I am one of those who understand history and understand that a program is large. Is this one. There are going to be kinks that are going to be required to be worked out. There are going to be growing pains. We have got to muddle through this process so that the benefit of being able to have health care coverage for more than 35 million people in this country is far greater than your perspective and even my perspective. Because I prefer that a system is set up where right now, if they're paying $1,500 per person who comes into the emergency room, and we can reduce that from $1,500 to about $700 or $800, that's a significant savings. And as I indicated, Henry, the CBO scored this already. It's going to cost us more to defund the program rather than to fully implement the program.
Not down the road.
Well, we'll see.
Down the road. It just is too expensive, and the incompetence in putting this thing into effect is the way that... Let me ask you a question.
We're running out of time.
Okay, but real quick, if this was such a good idea when Obama took over General Motors, why did they wipe out all the contracts? Why didn't they just grab all those people and put them on health care right then? Well, why did the union make sure that those contracts were destroyed so it wouldn't happen that way? And they were one of the first people to get a dispensation down the road. Now, you explain to me why the unions are this far against it, where they come out and they said straight out, this is going to ruin the middle class.
Well, I'm not going to...
That's the union.
I won't obfuscate on that question, but
There it is. I knew it would show its ugly head one time today.
But I will suggest to you that unions is a blanket statement. There might be some unions. There might be some that don't choke now.
I'm not, but the head of the unions.
Well, there might be some unions with a particular perspective and a particular ideological bent that
AFL-CIO.
Well, again, but we're not a monolith here.
Yeah, you know I'm right on this one. Come on.
Listen, we have run out of time. Okay. We have yet to get to Syria, which means, of course, that you have to come back next week.
I'll be more than happy to join you.
Absolutely. Henry, thank you so much for coming in. Next week, we're going to talk about Syria, and we're going to mull over the politics of voting rights. Are you up for that one?
Yes, I'll be ready.
Absolutely.
Believe me.
We're going to take a quick break. When I come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. I'd like to again thank Henry Hollingshead for coming in this morning to talk about some very important issues. I should mention that he and I work together at 89.3 FM, The Storm, and we had a great time there, and we are going to do some great things here as well. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. I also invite you to visit my blog for some insightful and provocative commentary, www.ronholland.blogspot.com. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.